Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, the only moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto. It's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Turtle Clock Hour, Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. D-Mace coming in clutch with some Gatorade. We say hello to ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck, who's with us. Timmy, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
You know, we're a little warm. We're out here at Titans training camp.
Practice, it could be worse.
Could be worse. Practice wrapped up about 45 minutes ago, but Todd Downing, Titans offensive coordinator, spoke earlier today, and of course he was asked a lot of questions about Malik Willis and his progression as he's in his first training camp. You know, from your quarterback eyes, how long in your mind do you think it's going to take him to really get rid of some old bad habits that he may have had in college, kind of learn how an NFL offense works, and specifically how the Titans offense works? What's kind of the timetable in your mind, or is it different for every QB?
Yeah, so, you know, basing this off of what I saw from him in college, I mean, I think that he's more than a year away in terms of being really ready to play. So, like, that would be my, you know, initial reaction to you know, how I would approach it in terms of, you know, having a package for him and all of that. He's a special runner. There's no question about that. But I think there's other aspects of, you know, how you want to bring him along and, you know, how, you know, much time you want to dedicate for your entire football team in terms of doing things that, you know, the starter isn't doing. So, look, I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's because it's the very beginning of the season. Maybe it's because we haven't had any preseason games where people, you know, maybe cool off on it. But, you know, I do feel like it is probably a little overkill, you know, whether it's Mike Vrabel or Downing or John Robinson or any of these guys to be answering so many questions about a third-round draft pick at quarterback.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking about this earlier, Tim, that to me he's in a no-lose situation because there's absolutely no pressure on him right now. Ryan Tannehill's the guy. Logan Woodside's the backup. He can sit there as the third QB and just learn and develop, which is, you know, not a luxury that a lot of quarterbacks coming in have. I mean, you draft somebody in the first, maybe the second round. I mean, we saw Russell Wilson in the third, and he took the job. But I think if you're saying he's more than a year away, that's not a bad thing. He's just going to have nothing but time to be able to develop.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think in you know, a lot of ways, you know, it's a really good thing, especially if a guy's not totally ready. I think the deal with Russell Wilson was probably a little bit different. You know, I think there were a lot of questions of like, hey, why did the NC State thing go down the way that it did? A lot of it had to do with his desire to play baseball. Tom O'Brien, the coach at the time, you know, was not okay with that. He ends up at Wisconsin. You know, at that stage, you know, people were concerned about quarterbacks that weren't over 6 feet tall. And so, you know, I think while there are examples of guys that, you know, weren't first or second round draft picks and come in and play right away, it's really rare. It's really, really rare. And I think, look, the reason why, you know, when you look at, you know, kind of how things have gone for, you know, or how things went for him in the draft, you know, just because I think people felt like there was room to grow as a passer.
We're talking with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN's NFL analyst. Now, Tim, we played a clip of Charlie Weiss yesterday talking about the Titans, and because obviously with Matt Ryan now being in Indianapolis, people are going back and forth on who may win this division. And, you know, Charlie basically said, hey, listen, until Tennessee gets knocked off the hill, they are my pick to win the AFC South. Do you think people are picking Indy because they trust Matt Ryan a little bit more than they trust Ryan Tannehill?
I think that could be part of it for some people, but I think the other aspect of it is that, you know, when you look at how that team is built, I think there's a lot to like about them. And, you know, not that it's completely different, you know, in terms of going through the roster of the Tennessee Titans, there's a lot of players to like there as well. But I think many people believe that the best line, the best offensive line in college football, in pro football, is the Indianapolis Colts. I think that people believe that the best runner in football is Jonathan Taylor. Now, look, you maybe feel, you know, really good about Derrick Henry, or, you know, maybe feel good about, you know, the run blocking ability of the Titans offensive line. But I think that, you know, on a national perspective, I think that most people would give the edge to the Colts in both of those areas. And I think when you look at receiver, I think there's no question that the advantage would go to the Colts, again, from a national perspective. And then same deal at quarterback from a national perspective. And so, you know, to say that that is right across the board, you know, I can't say that I would necessarily agree with that. But at the same time, look, if you're asking me today who I think wins the division, I'm going to tell you I think it's actually the Colts.
Well, you're just like many others, and I think I had this one coming down to possibly the last week of the season on who can win this division, because just like you pointed out, I mean, they are a good team all around. And with adding Matt Ryan, I think it brings a little bit more trust with that team, with him at quarterback. Now, can the Jaguars, and I know the Texans are still in here, but I think they're still a little bit ways from truly competing in the AFC South. But can Jacksonville, with Doug Peterson being there, be that team? I'm not saying they're going to win a division, the South or anything, but can they
be better,
the team that sort of is the flying ointment when it comes to Indy and the Titans?
Yeah, like they, to me, are a team that's kind of, I mean, just, you know, talk about, like, okay, what type of threat are they? Are they a legitimate threat to win their division? They won three games last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think the it's no different than you know, say you're talking about the AFC East, and you're like, all right, the Jets. It's like, look, they won four games last year. Like, are they going to win their division with Buffalo, New England, and Miami's getting better and all that stuff? No, they're not. But, like, have they improved enough, maybe, talent-wise, that type of stuff? You know, coaching, you name it, that all of a sudden, you know, year two quarterback making that jump, that you know, they're a headache for teams in the division. Look, I think Jacksonville 100% can be that. I really do. I don't think there's any question about what a disaster, you know, Jacksonville was a year ago with how they were, just their entire operation, and then a rookie quarterback that, you know, really played poorly at times. I would expect Trevor to be significantly better. I would expect the operation to be better. I do think the talent is better. And so with that, look, maybe they're just a six-win team, but I think they're a tougher out for everyone in the division.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, talking NFL.
Sorry, Tim. I wanted to ask you, we're still trying to sift through. We've actually been on the air when the Dolphins ruling came down about the tampering. What do you make of that? It does look like Tom Brady is going to be not really implicated in any of this stuff, but pretty significant penalties for the Dolphins there.
I mean, the penalty is significant. You know, I just would have to kind of look back to see where it stacks up in terms of other, you know, fines and, you know, removal of draft picks that we've seen in the past. But you talk about a first and a third round draft pick and a lot of money. So I think that, you know, it's I mean, you just also think about how quickly this went down in comparison to, you know, the decision on Deshaun Watson. You know, I think that it seems to me that the league was probably pretty eager to see this thing go away. The problem, I would say, is that, and I haven't gone through it, you know, too closely yet, but, you know, essentially what they're saying is, like, it's tampering, not tanking, you know, which I think there's some stuff in there in terms of the report that, Stephen Ross was joking, allegedly, when he told Brian Flores he'd pay him $100,000, you know, per loss. So there's part of me that thinks that, like, this report, like, this isn't going away because this just came out.
Okay, on the Watson, now that we've all had a day to process this, I hear, I don't want to put a direct number on it, but I would say at least 80% of the people that have really delved into this and have been following this think the punishment is light. And there are reasons for that. I get it. But is that how you see it, that it does seem a little light and there will be at least some sort of pressure on Roger Goodell to say it's not enough?
Yeah, I think I said to you guys months back, anything short of a year, I think people are going to be like, what is going on here? How does he not get a full year? I've thought that from the very beginning with just the number of allegations. And then when you read the report about, from Judge Robinson about, things that she believes did take place, it's pretty bad. And so, I think that the NFL, probably wants this to go away, so an appeal, won't help that happen because it'll drag it out and create more of a fight between the NFLPA and the NFL. And so there is a big part of me that thinks that the NFL is going to, my guess is that they don't love the ruling. My guess is that they're going to take a ton of heat for the ruling. But I also think they're going to want to move on. And so I don't think that we'll see an appeal from the league. That's my guess at this point.
Do not envy Roger Goodell at all for the position that he is in with this. Tim, great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week.
All right, see you, fellas.
Yep.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joining us, hitting a lot of different things. And you know what's crazy? There's a game Thursday night. The Hall of Fame game. It's back. Football is back. I'll watch a quarter and then probably turn it off. But at least it is back. Coming up next, we'll discuss some of the things that Tim said, including the Deshaun Watson situation. We will get back into that. Ask D-Mace coming up at 12:30 here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. Look, like many of you, I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews. These guys have kids, and they're all starting school in the next few weeks. Some have already started school. They've been shopping with their parents to make sure that they've got what they need and are ready to connect with their classmates. But there are way too many children in Middle Tennessee who won't get that same opportunity. They're living in homelessness, and they don't have the resources to spend on shoes and clothing. Well, we are here to change that, and we need your help. We've partnered with Souls for Souls to raise enough money to buy a pair of new shoes for the thousands of children in Middle Tennessee who need our help. $20 is all it takes. Please help us do the right thing. Text DONATE to 615-737-1025. It only takes a few minutes to change a life. Just text DONATE to 615-737-1025 and help us out. And thank you very much.
Yeah, I think I said to you guys months back, anything short of a year, I think people are going to be like, what is going on here? How does he not get a full year? I've thought that from the very beginning with just the number of allegations. And then when you read the report about, from Judge Robinson about, things that she believes did take place, it's pretty bad. And so, I think that the NFL, probably wants this to go away. So an appeal, won't help that happen because it'll drag it out and create more of a fight between the NFLPA and the NFL. And so there is a big part of me that thinks that the NFL is going to, my guess is that they don't love the ruling. My guess is that they're going to take a ton of heat for the ruling. But I also think they're going to want to move on. And so I don't think that we'll see an appeal from the league. That's my guess at this point.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us in the last segment, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every Tuesday at noon here on Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. Does not believe that the league is going to appeal the Deshaun Watson ruling of 6 games is the suspension. And look, I closed it out, guys. We said it yesterday. We've read through, you know, the ruling here and had some time to digest it. I don't envy Roger Goodell. I don't agree with every decision that Roger Goodell has made as commissioner. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't. I think he's botched some things, and that's kind of why he's in this situation of, you know, having to have an independent arbiter to, you know, to help with this. But from a moral standpoint, he should step in and make the suspension longer. But as Tim pointed out, if you're the league and you're the owners, are you saying, let's just move on, make this go away? And to me, that's kind of the – and I'm not saying this towards Tim. I mean, I think Tim is speaking from this is how the league is operated. I think that's part of the problem. I mean, this is something that I don't – you know, I think that he should be punished. I mean, she admitted – the judge admitted in her findings of his wrongdoing. She mm-hmm. just noted that there was not concrete evidence to support more than 6 games.
I don't know if that's what she even said. I mean, if you read everything and you listen to everybody that's gone through this, if you read line by line, there was evidence that he did almost everything you thought he did mm-hmm. in there. So if you read her decision and didn't know the punishment, I think you would come to the conclusion in reading her assessment of everything that happened, oh, boy. She's going to drop the hammer here. And then the punishment is only 6 games. She fell back on that precedent thing, but how could there be a precedent for circumstances like this?
Well, there was a precedent.
Not going to massage therapist.
There was a precedent. A precedent.
Who was the last massage person?
I'm just saying there was a precedent. Robert Kraft was the precedent.
But that was illegal activity.
No. But here's what I'm trying to get y'all to understand, whether we like it or not. This is what I'm trying to get y'all to understand, is that Robert Kraft not only did something that was detrimental to the NFL, he did something that was illegal.
Yeah, he did.
And for everybody. So once the court said there's nothing there, we dismiss all charges, and then the league couldn't even look at the video that showed him in the act.
Yes, that's true. But the judge did say that the Players Association used that in their argument.
Exactly.
But she said that was not a part of her decision.
I'm telling you, she probably didn't put that down, but it had to. And that's the
she did hear the argument.
It's not the judge's fault. It's the inconsistencies of the NFL. That's what it is.
Yeah.
In a situation like that, well, before Goodell became commissioner, this was under Tagliabue, Eddie Bartolio Jr., he got suspended
DeBartolo Jr.
Got suspended for a year. That had to do with gambling. And then you had Jim Irsay because of the public intoxication, driving while under the influence of alcohol. He only got a fine. And I think he may have got suspended a couple of games. He couldn't go. But he only got a fine, 6 games. Robert Kraft. Massage parlor, doing all of this is conduct detrimental to the NFL and the Shield. And what did they do to Robert Kraft? Tell me what they did to him.
Nothing.
So everybody's in uproar, but she's only going back. Hey, this is what the league has been doing. And this is why it's so tough for Roger Goodell now, because all the pressure was on Roger Goodell to do something to Robert Kraft. We all know this. It's pressure on him to do something. He must do something. And what did he do? Nothing.
Yep.
So you expect the same thing to happen in this situation?
Well, this is what's different. You have that new process. Let's give you a little history. Way before any league had unrestricted free agency, baseball, through Marvin Miller, was able to make a breakthrough before they even got to free agency in 1975-76. But they were able to get this process that the NFL just now, 45 years later, whatever, finally has to some degree. That's the ability to say, look, we have a grievance. Let's hear an independent arbitrator figure it out. You'll tell your side on the players. I'll tell my side on the owners. And we'll let the arbitrator decide what is right. The players gained that victory for Marvin Miller way, way back in the late 60s or early 70s. That was a huge thing. Now you have this process in the NFL where you have that. That's what happened here. Robinson was the independent arbitrator, agreed to by both sides. She made her ruling. Mm-hmm. But the NFL still holds that hammer of, well, if Roger Goodell doesn't like it, he can add to that, which is a dumb process to me. And he looks bad by basically going back door. He looks bad both ways because he has to be looking at this decision going, how in the world can you come to the conclusion six games after what you put out there? But he looks bad by saying, I don't like your decision, the independent arbitrator, I'm going to add to it. That's not a good look because what kind of process do you have if he's just going to disagree with the arbitrator?
Neither one is a good look. That's the problem. Like, if he adds to it, it's like, well, why even ask an independent arbitrator?
Why even have this process?
If he doesn't add to it, you're going to have a public outroar of, you know, we've had some female texters say, I mean, this is big for, you know, women fans that are women, because it's basically saying like, okay, you don't really care with just six games. If he doesn't add to that, then he's got to deal with that outroar. So, I mean, he is in a no-win situation.
Here's what the NFL said after Robert Kraft, and I keep going back to this. I don't think anyone's listening. I understand it's one versus a 30-something. I get that part. But this wasn't the first time. I'm sure it wasn't the first time that Robert Kraft just decided, hey, I'm going to go to this place. I mean, I've never been before. Let me go check it out. No. Okay, let's not be dumb here. Let's not be naive, okay? I know ignorance is bliss, but let's not do this, okay? This is what the NFL said. Our personal conduct policy applies equally to everyone in the NFL. Equally. They didn't say just to the players. They didn't say just to the coaches or the owner. They say anyone that works for the NFL or an owner, equally. Well, in Robert Kraft's case, it didn't. So what makes you think they're going to be able to do something now, further something now with Deshaun Watson? I'm not saying that Roger Goodell will not come back and say, hey, listen, this is what I know what Robinson said, the judge, but this is what I'm going to recommend. I'm with Tim. I think the NFL, and I said this yesterday, I think the NFL wants to get this past them as quickly as possible. The NFL is betting this. This is what the NFL
is
betting.
Not allowed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But this is what the NFL is banking on. Every time that there's been sort of this sort of outside thing that could possibly damage the league, and everybody's saying, oh, that's going to damage the league. Watch and see. Has it damaged the league?
No.
They are Al Capone, man.
Yeah.
Teflon. Nothing bothers.
So they're going to get caught on tax evasion.
That might be the only thing. But there's – I understand the magnitude of what happened, and I understand it was awful what he did. And had he gotten a year, I wouldn't have been complaining. Hey, you did it. You shouldn't have. It was more than once. Now you got paid a penalty, okay? But after all of these things that have been going on, the NFL has not suffered. You think the NFL is going to suffer?
No.
No, they're not. No. The NFL is not going to suffer. The NFL is going to get past this as quickly as possible, and they're going to keep on donating money to women causes. Money talks louder than everything. And if I give you a couple of million, it'll hush everything down.
Unfortunately, Derek, I think you might be onto something.
So. I'm not saying what he did was wrong. I mean, was right, because it was completely wrong. But I'm just going by the track record of what the NFL has done prior to this situation.
We will see. We will see what happens. But coming up next, Ask D-Mace. You must participate. And on the line is a pair of tickets to see My Chemical Romance at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 23rd. 615-737-1025. You can call. You can text 615-737-1025. Ask D-Mace. You can ask a 15-year NFL veteran. Coming up next, Chase William D-Mace, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Back here, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Chase Willie and D-Mace, still DRE, here for Ask D-Mace. This might have to be your theme.
Oh, yeah.
Ask D-Mace. 615-737-1025. You can call, you can text to ask Derek Mason a question. It can be about football. It can be about life. Like, I mean, you know. Yeah.
Life coach.
Life coach. He's giving me dating advice. Still gets me in the friend zone, but whatever. You know, it's fine.
Do you have a question for Derek today about
I'm your hitch.
Relationships,
you are my
dating
hitch.
Advice? That could happen today.
No. Not one that I want to ask on the air.
Just not today. Not today.
Maybe off the air.
Maybe
I'll ask that. The best question for Ask D-Mace will win a pair of tickets to see My Chemical Romance at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 23rd. 615-737-1025. I will start.
Well, hold on. We have to build this. Last week we did it. We had, let's be honest, we had a higher profile prize.
Uh-huh.
But this is about connecting with D-Mace. So, we need listener participation. We want this to go. We want you, the listener, to improve our show with a clever question to D-Mace about Titans training camp, about his career in the NFL, about life, about dating. Well, I don't know about that. Food,
you know,
movies,
yeah.
TV shows. This could all be under this umbrella here.
Yeah.
You've got this wealth of knowledge that D-Mace has. So why wouldn't you want to be a part of it? 615-737-1025. You can call or text. But we want the best creative question to come away with the prize. But it's really more about not the prize, but the connection and
yes.
making our show a great show,
come
which
on,
we're
people.
On our way to doing.
Come on, I know y'all want to ask me something.
Well, we
615-737-1025. Connect with D-Mace.
Yes.
Pick his brain.
We have a text.
I have a question for him, but I'm just going to take the back seat here.
Okay. Sonny on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What are you looking for when you were studying film?
What was I looking for? Studying film, a game day or just practice? Okay, game day, you're trying to figure out tendencies.
You're saying within the game?
Yeah, within the game.
Okay.
You're trying to feel – I'm talking
– after the game starts.
No. She's saying –
the morning.
Just what are you looking for when you're studying film?
Yeah, when I'm studying film before the game.
Okay.
So this is a Wednesday before a Sunday game. Typically, what we're looking for is, okay, how do they play a certain coverage, on particular downs? How does this individual play that coverage, meaning the defensive back? Is he lined up inside to tip it off? Is he lined up outside, head up? Because a lot of times, if you watch film long enough, you start to pick up tendencies on individuals, and they will tell you exactly what the coverage is going to be. It may be something as subtle as a foot placement, but you study it intently and enough that you pick up on that foot placement, or if a defense is in this defense pre-snap, what defense are they more likely to roll into post-snap? If they're looking if they're looking four across, do they go into man? Do they go into cover two? What is it? So you're just trying to pick up tendencies on one individual player,
right,
but then on the whole scheme.
What would be an example? Was there a defensive back that you noticed the way he was lining up and you took advantage of that just by where he played foot placement or the way he put his hips or something? What's a good example of that?
Well, there's not an individual. I think more importantly, it was, I would say, defense. Say like Pittsburgh, you always had to pinch it. You always had to pay attention to Troy Polamalu and where he was. Because
so even as a wide receiver,
even
you're
as a wide
him.
Receiver, because he was so good at really disguising what he was going to do, and he was so quick that if he lined up, say, in the box, he was fast enough to get back in the middle of the field. So you had to constantly watch film because he may be in that box and blitz, or he may be in that box and run to half the field. So those are things you gotta, as a player watching Pittsburgh, you had to really pay attention to what Troy Polamalu was doing, because if you knew exactly what he was going to do, then you can pretty much figure out what the defense is going to do, at least the secondary.
615-737-1025.
Yes. All right. Is it Richie? Is that who we have on line one? Let's go to Richie. Welcome into Ask D-Mace.
D-Mace, how can Will Smith recover from the slap of Chris Rock?
See, now that's a question that helps the show.
That's a good question.
This is going to add some levity to the show.
Thank
cannot
you,
wait to hear this answer.
Yes. Man, how does he recover? I don't know how you recover from that. I've never slapped somebody in broad daylight with a million or so people watching and like 15,000 in audience. I've never done that. But, I mean, I he's taken all the necessary steps. He's apologized. You know, he seemed remorseful. I know some people said, well, he's an actor. Now, forget that stuff. And see, that's what actors and actresses run into when they apologize. We quite don't believe them because they're used to doing that. But I think he's taken all the right steps. And in regards to apologizing to Chris Rock, now
you know. I read this the other day. I don't know if this was accurate or whatever, but apparently he's reached out to Chris Rock.
Yeah, Chris Rock is not ready.
He's not ready.
Yeah, and hey, that's what you got to deal with. You can't, just because you said sorry, you can't then dictate when the person accepts it, you know?
That is true. That is true.
So.
See, Chase, I thought he was asking about Will Smith, the lefty reliever of the Braves.
He's not with the Braves anymore. Yeah.
And not the catcher for the Dodgers. We're not even talking about that one.
The Will Smith experience is over in Atlanta. Let's
if they were
go.
Asked Chase, it definitely would have been about the Braves,
yes,
Will Smith.
Exactly.
Yes, it will. 615-737-1025. This is a good question. Dan in Nashville on our text line. Derek, be honest. Do you think the Titan fan base has gotten more passionate / improved since you left? Or has it declined? It seems like the excitement was higher back then, but it's coming back strong. Loved watching you play, man. Thanks, Dan in Sylvan Park.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it. That fan base we had for, you know, from 99 to 2004, 5, I mean, and even probably after I left, it was still there, was, I mean, some of the best I've been around. You know, that place, I don't think there was ever not a sellout. I mean, a legitimate sellout, like every seat. If you look up in the stands, I know sometimes they say, well, it's 69,000. You look up in the stands, like,
you see a lot of blue seats, a lot of red
seats. It's 69,000 that had tickets, but then they all come. But back then, when you looked, if they said 69,000, it was 69,000. And people outside watching from their tailgates as well. I think that fan base is starting to come back. I think the Titans do a really good job at, you know, making sure – their fans get in the building, and you got to tip your hat off to what the Predators did. I always go back to the Predators and how they made it really hard for opposing teams' fans to get inside that building. I think the Titans looked at that and said, listen, we need that type of atmosphere. I know we got to start winning, but we need that type of atmosphere. Well, they started winning, and now you're starting to see more and more Titan fans than anybody else.
All right, let's get one more in here. This is from Rebecca. During your NFL career, who is the biggest jerk you encountered? What did he do, and how did you manage keeping it classy if you did?
Biggest jerk. You know what? There was never – and I can honestly say this. I probably didn't like some people just because they were on the opposite team. But there was no – I can't say that there was no – big jerks out there. It's, you know,
I mean, the only one I really remember is you and Finnegan.
Yeah, but that was more so of, you know, it was just the heat of battle, and you know, anytime I stepped on the field.
So you would separate that. You're thinking more jerk all around and not just get
but
after
he did,
it on the field.
He did one thing that sort of pissed me. Excuse me, I'm sorry. That made me upset. I'm sorry. Let me stop.
You can say piss off. Okay. It's okay.
Yeah, can I say that? I got the suit.
Tim bounce.
I got the suit sitting next to me. I'm like, can I say that? No. But what really got under my skin is, you know, those guys that when they line up in front of you and you kind of go off and you make your move and it's a run play, then you kind of – you're jogging to the other side. And then all of a sudden they come from behind you and kind of pushes you or try to jack you up. That I don't like. He did that one time, and I didn't take kindly to it. I really didn't. And we found ourselves on the sideline, me hemming him up and him having me. So those are the things I dislike. He did that one time, and I sort of held on to that. You know, whenever we played the Titans, I sort of held on to that, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, every opportunity I had, I was going to try to go at it. But I'm able to separate, you know, what goes on the field goes on the field. You know, if that energy comes off the field, then okay. But if that energy stays on the field, then I'm good.
Yeah. Well, you're a chirper, though.
Yeah.
You did a little.
Oh, yeah.
I did a little trash talking.
Oh, I do my trash talking. But my thing is, at the end of the game, I give you dap, and we can go on about our business, man, because it's all a part of the game. If you don't trash talk, you shouldn't be playing.
So, real quick, that game where you and Finnegan kind of got into it, uh-huh. I was still hurt. You were with the Ravens. you weren't here anymore, but, like, I still loved you. Like, I'd play Madden, and so I was doing, like, a franchise on Madden.
Uh-huh.
And I had traded you back to the Titans. I cut you after that. You started that with Finnegan. I was like, you're out of here, Mason. You're
Finnegan.
Out.
Finnegan used to do a radio show on our station. And so we would talk to him every week. Mm-hmm. And he never talked about that specific game. But he would talk about like he was being funny. But I think this was his mindset. He said,
well, why do you think he got into it with Andre Johnson?
Oh, man.
Same
that was
thing?
Yeah, yes. That was one. He yeah. said, I would kind of flip a switch. He said the switch was on my leg.
Uh-huh.
He said, I have a switch on my leg. Somebody would ask him about it. He goes, I have a switch on my leg. Uh-huh. During the game, I flip the switch on. Mm-hmm. And then after the game, it's totally different. Mm-hmm. Right? But he's talking about that mentality you get into in the game. So I don't know if you have a switch, Derek, that you flip on and off, if yours is on your leg as opposed to your ankle or your
elbow. It's
just elbow.
My heart.
It's at the heart. Okay.
It's at the heart. As soon as I cross those
automatic.
Lines right there,
yeah.
As soon as I walk in that building, when I walk to that building, it's switched.
There you go. Ask D-Mace, a regular feature that you're going to hear on this show where you have the opportunity to ask Derek Mason football questions, life advice, whatever.
Oscars questions.
Oscars yeah. questions. Oscars? Oscar questions?
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be. So we will continue to do that. We'll award the winner. But coming up next, we'll get back into some things that we saw today here at Titans training camp, including hearing from both coordinators. Which we did earlier. We're in the final countdown to the fall sports season, and before everyone hunkers down in their man cave, we're providing the ultimate date night opportunity, a pair of tickets to see Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 16th. Tune in to 102.5 and 106.3 all next week for your chance to win, presented by Blend Bar. More coming here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here at Titans training camp, not Virginia Tech, but you did hear from Caleb Farley earlier, Titans corner. He was nice enough to join us on the show. Chase Willie and D-Mace, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. And it has been a busy day here at St. Thomas Sports Park. You'll hear from both coordinators spoke earlier today. But, you know, one thing that we haven't really gotten into yet mm-hmm. is the offensive line today. I feel like that's been a daily conversation, but Todd Downing, Titans offensive coordinator, was asked about Dylan Radunz and his development as he fights for that right tackle spot.
I think he's a much more mature player in year two. You know, you're seeing a little bit more buy-in to some of the techniques we're asking him to try, things that might be a little different than he did collegiately. And you see a little bit more comfort and confidence. You know, he's throwing a more confident punch, and he's certainly, having some success and wins with it. So excited about where he's at, and I think he's working really hard to continue that growth curve.
Well, I like that he feels like his confidence from year one to year two is come a long way. But I still am wondering, is Dylan Radunz going to be ready and be the best choice at right tackle?
Well, it's a wait and see game. I guess the two positions. On the offensive line, well, three, really, you don't want to have any questions at is obviously your left tackle, and they have, a stalwart at left tackle in Taylor Lewan, and we hope that Taylor can get back to the Taylor he was 2 years ago before the knee injury. Ben Jones is it's been a rock there at center. He hasn't missed a game. You want to talk about somebody's tough as a $2 steak. Ben Jones is tough as a $2 steak.
Yeah.
But now that right tackle, you're trying to figure out, is Dylan the guy? And he needs to show, man. He needs to be one of those guys that, and I know we haven't been talking about him and nobody's really sort of brought up Dylan Radunz, but there's one thing about camp. If you're being talked about a lot, that could be good or bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're not being talked about, then that could be good. But in Dylan Radunz's situation, I think that's bad. I think he needs to be a guy that needs to stand out. that we need to be talking about him in a good way. Like Dylan is doing this, he is really cementing himself as the right tackle for the Tennessee Titans. And that hadn't been a talk. To my knowledge, I don't know if you guys have heard anything else. I know he's the starter there right now, but there hasn't been talk of him. Hey, he's doing great in camp. I mean, he's showing out. This is our guy, yada, yada, yada. That hadn't been the case. So we're not talking about him could be a bad thing.
Now, would you say that really it's early because they've only had the pads a couple days? Those practices against other teams, are those the biggest things? Like, what would you judge him on more? Is the day in and day out, or how does he do up against sort of semi-live competition?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I think you will get and you brought up a perfect, scenario or example. I mean, I think we would truly find out how much progression he's made when Arizona and Tampa comes in here. We will see, okay? Because he doesn't usually go – these are not the guys he's going up against every day. These are guys that are trying to – I know guys here are trying to earn jobs too, but you're talking Arizona, Tampa. Those guys are trying to – they're auditioning for everybody, but they're trying to win a job on their opposing teams. So you're going to see them come a little bit harder than maybe our guy – but the Titan guys will. Not to say they're not practicing hard, but those guys – Arizona and Tampa, they're going to come a lot harder.
I'm trying to keep my expectations realistic because he was a – see, it's interesting. Raidens was a second-round pick. So the minute he's not playing at all last year, people are like, what's wrong with this guy? He's a bust. Because, of course, there have been some busts recently for Titans draft picks. And there's a worry. Whereas Quisenberry, the guy that – was the guy that started every game at that position last year, was the total underdog, off-the-street guy who worked his way up to being a starter in the NFL. So his story was kind of a feel-good story, but the reality was he basically gave you what you would think a guy like that gave you, baseline replacement-level stuff. He did not excel at that position. He was okay. And that was good because, they found him. He was available. They didn't spend a lot of money to get him. They didn't use a high draft pick at all to get him. He did a great job to overachieve, to fill that spot. But that's really all he was otherwise, he'd be back.
He was a serviceable guy.
Serviceable guy. They're looking for Raidens to be a little bit better than that. But the bar is pretty low, right, for them to be moved at that position. He doesn't have to be an all-pro guy. Raidens.
Where does Petit Frere fit in all this?
See, that's what I don't know. Yeah. Is it now? This is the other thing I don't know. Is it Frere or Frere? Petit Frere.
Well, we need to
ask that question.
Yeah. Afanasyev. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a process every new guy comes in, right? You got to find out. For example, the former Sound, Daniel Vogelbach.
Yes.
Is it Vogelbach or Vogelbach? I was watching the Mets last night. He's new to the Mets. They actually had to go down and ask him what it is. And it's Vogelbach, for those that want to know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what the pronunciation is, but hopefully, Derek, people start talking about him enough to warrant people figuring it out. That means he's doing well, probably.
Yeah, but then again, that sort of, yes, he was a third-round pick this prior year, but then that goes back to, well, you blew it on your second-round pick.
Right.
Again, if this
– But if you're a coach, you're like, just somebody go grab that job, right? I don't care what round you
pick it. Listen, yes, when they draft these guys first, second round, do they want them to be, all-world? Absolutely, they do. And that's just how it is across. Any guy that's drafted, they want to be able to come in and contribute. But – I think Vrabel, from what I've understood of him and everything else, is like, listen, I don't care if we drafted you first round, sixth round, free agent. Come in here and prove you're a starter. Come here and prove you can play. That's all I care about. So if Dylan Raidens isn't the starter, well, obviously somebody else beat him out. And I'm pretty sure Vrabel's like, I don't care. As long as the guy we got on the field can get the job done.
Coming up next, there's another player that Todd Downing really likes how they're progressing. We'll tell you who that is as you listen to Chase, Willie, and D-Mace live at Titans training camp, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.